is Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained.
News for the Soul is now in its 25th year of broadcasting. Tune in live or visit the archives at newsforthesoul.com. That's newsforthesoul.com.
Next on News for the Soul, it's time for the Whole Health Initiative with Dr. Holly. With more degrees than a thermometer, Dr. Holly's PhDs include psychology, natural medicine, herbal medicine, nutrition, and Ayurveda. She's a scientist, professional speaker, and the author of over 20 books. She also sees and works with energy, and she's here to help you achieve complete optimum health. Please welcome Dr. Holly back to News for the Soul.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Wednesday, September 28th. It's almost Christmas. We only have 3 months to go. Wow, this year went fast with a lot of interesting information. And we have some great information. It's always nice to show good, healthy information. Don't know how it's going to be expressed, but in the general media, I don't think it's been acknowledged yet. But let's go through it. I'm going to read a quote. And I've given you on the article, which Nicole will archive for you. But I'm going to read what was sent to me. Okay, it is a court win. It is a major, major, major court win. We, according to Action for Canada, Tanya Shaw, we've won over 700 lawsuits. But this is a really, really, really big one. So I'm just going to read what was sent to me, and then I'm going to ask you some questions about it. Supreme Court ruling, hardly anyone noticed that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. won the case against all the pharmaceutical lobbyists. COVID vaccines are not vaccines. Now, if you don't know Robert F. K. Jr., you should. Bring him up. He has done so much lobbying for way before the COVID narrative about vaccines and other issues. His program is called Children's Health Defense, and he is fantastic. He is interviewed all over the place, well known. So if you haven't seen any of his interviews or read any of his articles or read his book about Fossey, holy cow, did he really explore all the criminal activity. It's fascinating. Even my father, 90 years old, kept saying, holy cow, holy cow, holy cow. It is a powerful book, so you might want to read that too. Anyways, let's continue on with this quote that I'm reading. In the ruling, the Supreme Court confirms that the damage caused by COVID, mRNA, gene therapies is irreparable. Now, part of that I would go along with if you just look at allopathic medicine. As we've said, when it comes to herbal medicine, herbs like turmeric and pine needle extract are known to reverse damage or alterations in your genetic DNA, DNA and RNA. So remember that. But according to allopathic or conventional Western medicine, it is irreparable. As the Supreme Court is the highest court in the United States, there are no further appeals, and the appeals have been exhausted. In an initial statement that this was a success that was only possible thanks to the international cooperation of a large number of lawyers and scientists. Of course, this judgment opens up something internationally, especially here in Switzerland. This judgment should make waves because Switzerland has a special position here with its federal constitution. On the one hand, the Nuremberg Codex is the constitution with articles 118b, and the misuse of genetic engineering in humans is prohibited in Switzerland according to article 119 of the federal constitution. This is supplemented by article 230 BIS of the criminal code, et cetera, et cetera. Thus, the perpetrators risk up to 10 years in prison. But this judgment should also make the rest of the world sit up and take notice because the Nuremberg Code is internationally valid and is also included in the Article 7 of the International Covenant of Civil and Political Rights. In the case of criminal charges, the statement must include a reference to the Contraground scandal in order to give special weight to the importance of this charge. The policy is thus facing a hot autumn. So that being the case, now we have the following questions we need to think about. Who is going to get arrested and sentenced? Not a vaccine, it's a bioweapon. So who is going to get arrested and sentenced? Do you want the big pharma like that, Pfizer, J&J, Moderna? Do you want the people who own those pharmaceuticals, Vanguard, BlackRock, State Street? Do you want government officials that have been paid, especially in Canada? We know that they've been paid right down to mayors and city councillors. What about all the corruption in the media that marketed the fear, that knew it was false but got paid to market the fear? And we usually, I think, a CBC in Canada gets paid $1.9 billion a year to follow the direction that they're given. What about the physicians and nurses who gave the shots or refused to provide medical help unless the patient got the shot? What about school teachers, union leaders, board of trade directors, pastors, indigenous chiefs that all got paid to push the shot? Think about all the people who have been threatened, pushed, shamed, guilted, adults, children, employees, members of various groups to take this deadly weapon or push it on others. Who are you going to hold accountable? The next question is, who's going to arrest these people? Is it country-specific police forces, military forces, international military forces? Who is going to be orchestrated, paid, identified to arrest these people? Three, they are arrested. Do you think they should go through their own country military tribunals, provincial or federal courts, or international courts? Now, note, with a military tribunal, those don't take days, weeks, months, years to go through it. Typically, with a military tribunal, it's done in one day. And typically, an execution. Should they be given a term in prison? And if so, for how long? Should they be given the option to provide more information versus execution? Now, when people have seen loved ones suffer, or have suffered the loss of loved ones due to this corruption, the answer might come more easy than for the rest of the people who are looking on, just reading, listening to the information. But regardless of who you have seen suffer or not, these are difficult questions to answer. Past. People with a lot of money have often bought their way out of criminal charges. So then we have to be wary that the answers we are looking for, the results that we're looking for, may not be what you specifically have in mind. That is challenging. So if you want to go to the source, I've given you a source on which from which I read this. But second to that, Dr. Trozzi, if you've ever heard of him, he's a Canadian physician who's a really good activist and has a lot of great articles and interviews on his site. Go to drtrozzi.org, T-R-O-Z-Z-I. And there's another doctor. He has so many doctors that come on, scientists as well as physicians, that come on saying these shots need to be stopped and why. And so I've given you at the end of this article one more interview that you can, I think this one is a video that you can watch identifying exactly why this should be stopped. I mean, there's just so much information. So many people are saying, God, if you don't know how corrupt this is, you got to be incredibly ignorant. But the fortunate part is there's still people out there who believe the government is there to serve you, that the doctors know everything, and that the journalists are telling the truth. What it'll take for these people to wake up, who the heck knows? But there is so many people that are now waking up, starting to ask questions they should have asked right at the very beginning, that this is a very interesting time to live in. Okay, that's all I was going to do from the medical perspective. So the next one is answering questions. Let's look at that. The other question was, is, again, like we've said so many times, it's interesting. This is huge. What I just read to you is incredibly huge. How come it's not all over the media? How come you have to go to alternative media to find out about it? Even alternative media has been slow in picking it up, for crying out loud. It should be everywhere. Okay, questions. From Shayla, I hope I'm saying that correctly, in New York. And her comment question is, what can we do about candida? Well, candida is a yeast infection. Now, we all have yeast, just like we all have cancer. It's a matter of, the bigger question is, whether or not you have a sufficient immune system to keep it under control. Now, symptoms for, and I'm assuming she's talking about vaginal yeast, because that's usually what people ask, is the symptoms may include a burning or an itching of the vulva. It may include redness and typically a white discharge. So number one, recognize that sugar supports or feeds yeast. Yeast can fluctuate with your hormones. There are two phases in the four-week menstrual cycle, assuming that you're somewhat on that 4 weeks. Week two is leading up to and including ovulation, has the high estrogen levels, and those estrogen levels can not only cause the infection, but they weaken the body's resistance to the infection. Week four is the week prior to your period, and the opposite happens here. Your estrogen levels plunge, and because of that, the pH of the vaginal tract goes down, and you tend to have a reduction in the Lactobacillus acidophilus, which is a type of bacteria that's really important to the vaginal canal, in particular in this instance, because they block the yeast. Well, if you have a reduction in them, they're that much less able to block the yeast. Now, week two is more important than week four, but in both those weeks, you can have more flare-ups. So activities can also a female to vaginal yeast infection. That's kind of redundant. Males don't have a vagina, but I wrote it that way anyways. I'm going back saying, well, that's, yeah, okay. Why? Because yeast grow in a moist, dark environment. So vaginal yeast and bacteria can thrive when you do exercise and the skin is perspiring. It's a dark environment. It's a moist environment. So whether you're working out at home or at a gym or you're running, you make sure that you get your sweaty underwear and those sweaty leggings off right away and make sure you shower and clean all that area so that you don't allow an environment, think about the terrain versus the germ, you don't want to provide a terrain that allows that germ to grow. Now, diets can also help with vaginal yeast infections. And so foods that you want to feed, obviously, are foods that have candida in them naturally. So alcohol, fruit, and fruit juices, breads, and simple carbs that have a high sugar content or turn to sugar quickly are going to support the yeast. So you don't want to use those. And instead, you want to use foods that have high probiotic, and especially the bacteria that you're looking for is the Lactobacillus acidophilus. And where do you get acidophilus? Lactobacillus acidophilus. It's funny, with some words I have no problem pronouncing them, and other words I just cannot for the life of me pronounce them correctly. Must be my genetic disorder. Who the heck knows? Anyways, what has Lactobacillus acidophilus? Your yogurts, kefir, any fermented dairy. Now, miso has it, and so does tofu and soybeans. I don't recommend those because 92% of soy is GMO. So I would rather you not use the GMO products. However, your fermented foods and your soft cheeses are great for it. Other foods include, foods that are high in D3. For instance, your steelhead trout. And I always recommend steelhead trout to the salmons because the salmons do have a higher level of radiation. They, you know, a lot of controversy in the studies that test salmon. But brief story behind that is since Japan had the falling out of all the radioactive material and sunk the ship that had a huge number of radioactive containers. Some say that the fish in the Pacific now has a lot more radioactive material in it. Other studies, especially government studies, say there's no issue to be concerned. Well, whenever it's a government study, I don't believe it. I'm sorry, but I'm one of those people who have no faith in the government anymore at all, on any level. So I suggest the steelhead trout, which is your freshwater component of or category of salmon, even though it's called a trout, it is a salmon, is healthier for you than the Pacific salmon. And that includes all the Pacific salmon, although some apparently are more susceptible to the radiation than others. So you've got your chum, you've got your coho, your sockeye, your spring. You have different types, and depending, I think, now this is just a hypothesis I would put out there, the ones that have more fat, which is like your spring and your sockeye, which gives them a lot more flavor. Your spring has even more, which leaves it more moist. But it also has a higher probability of storing the radiation in the fat cells, I would think. I don't know that. I haven't looked at that. That's just a hypothesis off the top of my head. Okay, but what other foods are high in D3? Your sardines, your eggs, your... Now, these eggs that are high in D3 are the ones that are outside running around all day. They're not the ones that have been left out of a cage, small cage into a larger cage for 5-10 minutes for the day. These are the real eggs off your farms that have the free-run eggs. So we work with two gals. One has 50 hens and the other has 100 hens, and their hens are running around outside all day long. So you can imagine that they have a much higher D3 content than the ones that are kept in huge warehousing facilities, basically, that are kept in cages. Okay, so those foods to avoid and to embrace will help you with candida. Now, there's other things that can help you in activity. So let's look at some behaviors that might help. Now, again, the number one thing is when you've worked out, even if you're doing Pilates or you're going for a bike ride or, you know, you're working on your home bike, whatever it happens to be, if you're going to have any kind of perspiration, you will have perspiration in the vaginal area, so get rid of the underwear, get rid of the leggings or whatever you happen to wear, and make sure you have a shower and clean that private area well. Now, the flip side of the coin is you shouldn't be doing your douching. Douching can both irritate and disrupt the natural body's bacteria. So you want to do just a normal shower cleanse. With your fingers, you might want to apply coconut oil to the affected area, and you want to do that twice a day. Now, there's some studies that say it works and other studies that say it doesn't. So what I tell people to do is not only with the coconut oil, so the lauric acid and the caprylic acid in your coconut oil are antimicrobial. Some studies say that they can even get rid of things like herpes. So just to make it more powerful, what I suggest people to do is put a couple drops of oil of oregano, tea tree oil or neem oil into that coconut oil when you go to apply it topically to the affected area, and they are all great antimicrobials that can also help. Another thing to do is to avoid tampons. Tampons can actually alter the pH of the vaginal tract, so you don't want to alter it to support the yeast. You want to keep it nice and healthy. You also want to avoid any products that have perfumes. Especially, obviously, in that area, as they can alter the natural pH of the skin. You might have to the perfumes, but it's the pH of the skin that might support the candida growth that we're concerned about. So, of course, you would use mild or natural soaps that don't have perfume in them. You want to wear loose-fitting clothing that can prevent any kind of moisture buildup. Okay? So hopefully that gives you some good ideas on how to deal with candida. The other thing is candida does grow in a cycle, but we won't get into all that. Just note that you should continue whatever therapies you have decided, continue to do them way past having a candida reaction, because it can be there at a subclinical level and it will just, again, increase the growth as soon as you've stopped doing whatever you're doing. So we always say, for a couple months past the symptoms, keep doing it. All right, now we move on to Haley in New York. How can I find a doctor who is not run by Big Pharma? Now, that is a huge question. Most med schools are supported by Big Pharma. And it's not just the med school component or department of the university, but often huge other areas in the university are also supported by Big Pharma. So when I was in med school, it goes back just a few years, when I was in med school, what they said argued the evidence given, that it was hypothetical, not evidence-based. I argued risk versus relative, absolute risk versus relative risk, because they weren't being taught that. Actually, I was told to stop asking questions because I was destroying the morale of the students. Interesting. Why? Because what they were having to teach was being determined by Big Pharma. So it's not just are they run by Big Pharma, but even the curriculum on which they're taught is determined by Big Pharma. So they're embraced with it right from day one. And they're not taught how to question. They're not taught critical analysis or hypothetical reasoning. They're not taught how to question how to question the scientific studies that are provided by Big Pharma. They're not taught to look at the fact that, you know, you can have 10 studies, and 8 studies show how detrimental a given drug might be. One study might show it's neutral, and one study shows it's beneficial. It's only the one beneficial study that will be taken to the FDA for passing. So all these other kinds of issues that play into why med students are given such distorted information. So now they become doctors and believe what they've been taught. After all, you know, they've spent a lot of years and paid a lot of money to get their degree and have no idea how corrupt it is. Now, I also want to bring in the fact that I've talked with a couple of physicians lately that are standing up and who have lost their license because they stood up and fought the system. Each one of them have said the same thing. MDs are typically pretty lazy. They don't look at current research. They don't follow through with, you know, questioning. They don't look at who's providing the funding. They just don't look at anything like that. They just do what they were taught. Oh, well, that makes it difficult. So you might want to interview your doctor, your MD, before you set up an appointment. When was the last time they did research? What kind of research do they do? And how often do they keep up with it? Secondly, you might want to consider someone who does real medicine versus synthetic. And the reason I say real versus synthetic is in all the, quote, alternative medicines, you're using real food and herbs or energies. And in Western conventional medicine, you're using synthetic products, man-made products, not real products. So for me, that's real versus synthetic. You might want to go to a doctor of natural medicine. You might want to go to a good herbalist or a nutritionist. Now, nutritionists I have an issue with because I saw in one study how many of them were backed actually by Coca-Cola. And I thought, well, so much for that. So you want to look at who backs their given college or association in your state or your province. You might be interested in, if you're East Indian, in Ayurvedic medicine, or if you're Oriental, in Chinese medicine. Now remember, no matter what area, what modality you go into, you're going to have practitioners that are incredulously awesome, and you're going to have practitioners that are for the birds, and then you're going to have the majority somewhere in between. Now, why did I include naturopaths? Well, in my province, it was determined that if naturopaths take another course in pharmaceuticals, we did take a course in pharmaceuticals, but they had to take another 60 hours, I think it was, and they were allowed to prescribe a number of prescription drugs. So that's what they were fighting for, while at the same time, they're telling you how horrible the drugs are because A, they're synthetic, B, they're toxic, C, over 90% of them, they don't even know the means of action that they're operating with. It's indicated or suggested or hypothesized. And to give you a really dramatic example, there was one antidepressant, but when it came off its patent, it was no longer used as an antidepressant. It was used for urinary tract infections because they don't know the means of action. So if it depletes your nutrients and it's only hypothesized and average, we can give another stat here, pharmaceuticals across the board work for about 18% of the population. And with that, I'm sure there's some overlap for the fact that you have to take, depending on the study, between 32 and 38% as being placebo effect. So why would you take these drugs? But some naturopaths are what we call green allopaths. They treat the body from an allopathic perspective. Treat the organ, treat the symptom, manage the symptom, et cetera, as opposed to trying to find what the underlying cause is. So that's why I questioned naturopaths. Number one, that many of them have become just green allopaths. Some of them started out as green allopaths. And in Canada, they have been under the gag legislation just like the MDs. Okay? Or at least in BC. I don't even know if that's across Canada. I know it's definitely in BC. Okay, so studies were done years ago. Another huge issue that comes up here is a study was done like some 20 years ago with it wasn't by a big pharma. I'm trying to think who it was by. I can't remember. But what they showed was that when med school students are asked about their connection with big pharma, how would they work with big pharma in terms of getting paid off or being given all the additional bonuses, grants, etc. with big pharma, there's a wide number of ways that big pharma will pay you out. But when they were in med school, some 86% said it was unethical. By the time they had been working in private practice for 2 years, it dropped to below 10%. So that's huge. You know, how much is your physician being paid off, being supported, being maneuvered, being given false information so that he will prescribe pharmaceutical drugs? So between physicians being pretty lazy, being conned by big pharma, both in med school and in practice, and then being paid off, I don't know how you're going to find a physician who is not controlled in some way by big pharma. It's a really difficult question, which is why we go back to look at for, you know, as I often say, find a health practitioner, not an MD. Someone who's interested in managing your health, not your sickness. Someone who wants to identify how to engage the body back in its own natural healing processes. Okay? I hope that gives you some ideas. It doesn't really answer your question, unfortunately, because I really don't know how to answer your question, but those are important issues to be concerned about. Okay. Next question. I have an energy problem. I am tired all the time. Please help. Well, we have talked about this repeatedly. Lack of energy can be attributed to several things. So let's start going over some of those things. Like I say, you can go back into the archived articles because we have addressed this so many times in so many different ways. At a nutritional level, the most common deficiencies are iron or B12 or glutathione. Now, you can go get iron and make sure you get natural plant-based iron as opposed to pharmaceutical iron. Iron is very hard to absorb. It's hard on your gut. It's hard on your liver. And once you have enough of pharmaceutical iron, it's hard to eliminate. Plant-based iron is entirely different. Easy to absorb, easy to eliminate. Now, I'll give you an example. I had a client that had been on pharmaceutical prescription for iron for 3 years and had not brought their prescription up or their iron levels up at all. No change. 3 years. And had all kinds of gut issues and liver issues because of it. I said, well, why don't we try a plant-based iron instead? Within 3 weeks, she was within the normal range. So you might want to consider that. B12 is controversy over whether it's more effective under the tongue or an injection. I prefer under the tongue. Number one, I don't give injections for anything. But I prefer under the tongue because at any time with an injection, you have the possibility of infection or some other issue coming up. And there is no difference in the absorption level whether you do it under the tongue or injection. Glutathione is a whole other ballgame because we have to get the cells to make the glutathione, so don't go buying GSH, which is the chemical acronym for glutathione, because it, just like it is in foods like avocado and asparagus and parsley, it will break down in the hydrochloric acid of your stomach and you lose the cysteine, which is why people take N-acetylcysteine. If you know your glutathione is level, don't take N-acetylcysteine for any period of time. It's not good for you. But if you're not bringing your levels up, then you might want to look at things like turmeric and milk thistle, which will also help bring your levels up. You also might want to look at whether or not your mitochondria is functioning, because if it's not, you're not going to make it. Your methylation cycles are not functioning, which need typically B9, but sometimes B12 as well. And if they're not functioning, you're not going to make your glutathione as well. So all those issues can have huge impact on fatigue. Now, at a cellular level, the most common issue would be your mitochondrial dysfunction. And, of course, we've talked many times about how big pharma is actually the number one cause of mitochondrial dysfunction. Out of all the different causes we have, pharmaceutical drugs are the number one cause of mitochondrial dysfunction. Well, if your mitochondria are producing the energy and the fuel in the cell and they can't function, you're going to feel fatigue, golly gee whiz. Organ level. One of the most common issues is the adrenal dysfunction, whether you're in hyper or in fatigue mode. Hyper typically runs for a while before you end up in fatigue and your adrenals just go, oh, no, can't do this anymore. And, of course, adrenal dysfunction can lead to hypothyroid, all of which can cause huge fatigue issues. Now, at a system level, the system we would be looking at is the gastrointestinal system. And the gut may be reacting to a number of things that can cause fatigue. For instance, if it's reacting to pathogens, parasites, bacteria, yeast as well. If you have a lectin reaction or a reaction to lectins. Lectins are a type of protein that binds to sugar, and they're found in things like red kidney beans, soybeans. Again, I don't promote soybeans. Wheat, lentils, tomatoes do have lectins in them, but they don't seem to cause the same kind of problems. So it's a different type of lectin, presumably. You may have a reaction or sensitivity to nightshade vegetables. Tomatoes, again, eggplants, peppers, potatoes, and even tobacco, they all have what's called solanine, which is an alkaloid. And in some bodies, the gut reacts to the solanine. Now, you can also be tired all the time because of psychological stress. So if you suffer from depression, stress, anxiety, those can all cause fatigue. Pain can also be huge in causing fatigue. You may also have a toxicity, for instance, heavy metal toxicity, and that can cause fatigue. So let's go over some of the heavy metal toxicities. Number one, of course, mercury. We know that's in the old type of fillings. So if you have an old type of filling, what's called amalgam, then every time you eat or drink hot food or water, you're going to have mercury vapors go into your body. They then affect your immune system, and they can affect your fatigue level. Typically, the assessment is done in the teeth or in the hair. But what foods have fish? Well, have mercury. A lot of fish do. Not just salmon, swordfish, shark, tuna, halibut, king mackerel. They all have mercury in them to varying degrees. Arsenic. Arsenic is found in water supply, golly gee whiz, in rice, in Brussels sprouts, in dark meat fish. Not dark meat, fish. So tuna, again, mackerel, salmon, and sardines. Chicken, and even some beer and wine. Now, that is questionable, and I forget what it is, but very often in the processing of beer and wine, there's something else that comes in that they will use for the beer and wine, but it also eliminates the arsenic, and I can't remember what it is, but you might want to look into that if you drink beer and wine. Aluminum. Aluminum has been added for sugar, water sources, baking soda, vaccinations, and it also inhibits your glutathione. So aluminum can cause fatigue. Thallium. Now, thallium is found in car exhaust, and it's found with all these things, foods harvested in contaminated soils. But foods that are more likely to have thallium in them include cabbage, cauliflower, kale, and broccoli. So all those different things, from the organs to the cells to the systems to the diet to the whatever, can have issues that can cause toxicity. So that's a really good example. Think about how often I say, but it depends on what's causing the issue. So if your issue, say, was a deficiency in iron, then none of those other issues may apply. On the other hand, if you're reacting, you eat a lot of fish and you're reacting to mercury in fish, then taking B9 or 12 or iron is not going to help very, very little. So it's a really good example, as most questions are, to show you how so many different things can cause the issue. It's not a simple answer. And we're not allowed ethically to say, well, this is the protocol you should take, which is why, you know, I'm forever giving you, understand that there's a lot of different causes. Right, it's kind of like psychology. You can have 10 kids from the same dysfunctional, disruptive family and have 10 different styles of personality to deal with it. They all came from the same family. You know, whether dad was an alcoholic and an abuser, mom was, say, had a psychological disorder, whatever, that, you know, it could be sexual abuse, physical abuse, verbal abuse, whatever might be going on, but each child will learn to cope in their own way. Right? So it's kind of like that with symptoms as well. We know all our bodies are individual, they're unique, and they respond differently in different ways to different things. So there isn't a one all catch-all kind of answer. Understand what's going on. That's why I loved naturopathic medicine, doctor of natural medicine, herbal medicine, nutritional medicine, far more than allopathic, because in all of them, to some degree, it's just causing the problem, not managing the symptoms. Okay, and to me that is huge. Okay. Have I gone through all that? Yep, I've done all that. Okay, so the next part we have is gardening. Yay, my favorite topic these days. Okay, so you may be interested in gardening because there's a food depletion going on. Of course, the same narrative is trying to control food and fuel now and finances. So you'll probably see less and less product on the shelves and prices going up, 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 and be somewhat concerned. It may be that you know that our food is hugely toxic and has increasingly less nutrient. There's less nutrient in the soil, especially big commercial farms. We've known for ages that they're depleted in magnesium, but the agricultural soils are becoming more and more depleted, and they're putting in more and more toxic fertilizers. And in some places, we don't even have the fertilizers anymore. So we have to go back. Hopefully, they will start going back to real fertilizers rather than synthetic ones. You may be interested in gardening because you just want healthier food, or because you enjoy the gardening, or because you know the electromagnetic frequencies that you get out of the earth are far healthier than what you get in the 3G, 4G, and 5G. So there can be a variety of reasons that you are getting into gardening, which I applaud you if you are. I've only been harping on this for 7 years. But lately, we've got a whole other reason, not just because food is getting more and more scarce and more expensive, but if you believe there's chemtrails, actually, whether you believe in chemtrails or not, we know our atmosphere is hugely polluted. And that pollution is going on to all the outdoor gardens. So what are we going to do about that? Well, how about growing a garden in your garage? We've been talking about this for some time now. Using heat lamps, using ventilation, using grow lights, you can grow your own food in the garage. So I have a variety of different gardens in my garage, using different formats, using different types of raised gardens with different depths, different buckets, different all kinds of stuff, different grow lights, trying to see what grows best where and how. And it turns out that an awful lot of things grow really well. Well, if they can grow in your garden, or sorry, in your garage, they could grow in a guest room, in an office, in a bathroom, all kinds of places in your house, okay? So what can we work with? Well, and the big thing is grow up. You know, people laugh, say, oh, holy, you can't supply a whole family's worth of food doing that way. Well, you can't if you grow out. But if you have the intellect, the creativity to grow up, all the foods that grow up, so your pole beans, your vine tomatoes, indeterminate tomatoes, cucumbers and squashes, anything that you can grow up, grow high and use this, the free space above to grow all your fruits and vegetables. I'm also using hanging baskets. So I have a hanging basket with blueberries, another one with strawberries, another one with oregano, and you know, goes on and on. So you want to grow up. When you grow high and use all that space above the garden, you're going to produce a whole lot more. But what can you produce? Okay. Well, there's a concept called overwintering. Now, overwintering is the act of planting certain hardy vegetables in your garden for harvest in early spring. Plants will grow and establish themselves during the final days of late autumn, early winter, and then come back and grow with a vengeance as soon as the sun starts shining. That's overwintering. And garlic is a really good example of that. We always plant our garlic in late October, early November. It loves the cold. And then it comes back usually in the spring to really grow up and develop. Now, onions, leeks, shallots, they're all fed the same as So let's just briefly go over this. Garlic has over 350 nutrients. 33 of those nutrients are sulfuric compounds. Those sulfuric compounds are not only great for all your connective tissue, 29 different types of connective tissue in the body, but they're also very good for helping you make glutathione. So you know how much I like my glutathione. Okay, so the following will die off in the winter, but come back in the spring and might do well in your garage. Carrots, kale, leeks, onions, parsnips, spinach, Brussels sprouts. I don't harvest my Brussels sprouts till Christmas time. They say after Thanksgiving. Well, I'm sure they mean the American Thanksgiving because my Brussels sprouts are nowhere near being ready for Canadian Thanksgiving. We harvest them and have them for Christmas. But there's another concept you might want to be familiar with, and that's called winter gardening. Now, that involves planting and harvesting throughout the winter. You usually need them to protect from the harsh winter climate. So if you leave them outside, you might have to put cages over them or cloth or something over them to protect them from the harsh winter. But what about bringing them into your garage? So basically all your root vegetables, your beets, your carrots, your radishes, your parsnips, you can work with all of them, turnips, another one. But lettuces and other cold vegetables like kale, lettuce, Swiss chard, spinach, all of those do really well. In fact, they're doing fantastic in my garage right now. I have also brought in, I started in my garage, asparagus. Now, if you know asparagus, it's a fantastic vegetable for you, loaded with avocados. Sorry, it was glutathione, sorry. But your asparagus has to take 2 to 3 years to establish its crowns. And once the crowns are well established, then you'll have asparagus for the next 20, 30 years. So outside in my raised garden beds, I have 22 raised garden beds. I have one bed that is allocated just to asparagus. I grow white, green, and purple asparagus. And although we've had many meals out of it this year, being the third year of developing the crowns, This is the second year, and we still have several meals out of it. But it, again, is predominantly the males that look like huge dill that grow up. But I've started them in the garage as well. And again, I've got those males that look like dill that are developing the crowns in my garage. I'm hoping I'll have lots of asparagus throughout the years in my garage. Now, I've also put in started in the garage as well as trans pole beans and bush beans. Okay, again, yellow, purple, and green from the small regular green bean that you'll find in a superstore or in a grocery store to the great big Romano beans, broad beans, Italian black bean that have the really big long ones, wide long bean, as well as I've just started germinating the foot long beans to see if I can grow those in the garage as well. I do have cucumbers. They grow, seem to grow a heck of a lot slower in the garage than they do outside, but they are growing. I have peppers, five different types of pepper plants, and they are doing incredibly well in the garage. Potatoes are looking fantastic in the garage. They've been in there for 2 months. They're now just starting to flower. So we'll start harvesting those shortly. And as soon as we harvest, I'll be planting more again. Now, tomatoes I've started in the garage, tomatoes I've transplanted to the garage. Some are doing really, really well, and some are kind of weak looking. So we'll see how that all turns out. Outside, I planted 8, I think, new varieties I've never planted before outside. And some of them, the little yellow oblong kind of tomatoes, man, they just took over everything. It was hilarious. But we have all kinds, from the pink ladies to the red tigers to tiger greens to, I mean, we just have so many different varieties. So I'm growing all the different ones in the garage, both starting them from seed and small plants to when the season is over, which for us in the Vancouver area will be at the end of October, beginning of November. I'm going to take all my big plants and transplant them into the garage and see what I can do with them. Historically, what I have taught is take those roots, hang them upside down in the garage, and you'll for a couple more months, not only to produce more tomatoes, but of course to ripen them. And you don't need sunlight to ripen tomatoes. You just need the gases from tomatoes. So we've done that before, so this is going to be entirely different. What else do I have in there? I have a couple different types of squashes. I have loads of zucchini, both green and the golden yellow zucchinis. I have outside still a strawberry basket and a blueberry basket. And if any of you know Dr. Mel, yeah, the whistleblower for all the stillbirths and miscarriages, he gave me a beautiful blueberry basket, and here it is in end of September, and it's developing new blueberries. I love that. So a big part of this is experimental, but what do we have in our gardens? Just to run through what is in the garage garden right now. Well, we've got the potatoes, the asparagus. We have Brussels sprouts. We have zucchini, green and yellow zucchini. We have a couple different types of squash. We have several types of peppers, bell peppers. I'm trying to go around. We have all the different herbs, so sage and parsley and rosemary and thyme and basil and chives. And I can't think of anything else right now. I have sweet potatoes growing in there. I've got tomatoes, pole tomatoes, pole beans. I actually have bush beans as well. We've got different types of cucumber, lettuces, Swiss chard, kale in there. I didn't put any rhubarb in there because they stay outside and do really well outside, so I actually didn't bring any in. I have 4 different types of strawberries, and now my strawberry and blueberry hanging baskets. I've got onions. I won't put garlic in the garage because I'll do that outside. They like it really, really cold. Onions and carrots and turnips and parsnips. I think that's everything I got. I got a lot in my little old garage. My dad keeps saying there's nowhere to put the car. I said, no, we're using it for a garden now. Okay. So Brussels sprouts, again, I leave them. I do have some inside, and I do have some outside. And the winter squashes that I'm thinking can grow really well inside over the winter include acorn, banana, buttercup, Hubbard, spaghetti, and turban squash, although I don't have any. But those are considered your winter squashes. So they should be able to do well in the winter. Now, when you're working on it, remember companion growing and remember the depth of the root. For some things, like all your herbs, they tend to have real shallow roots, whereas things like tomatoes need really deep rooting systems. So whether it's a separate bucket or not, that's up to you. But just be aware whether, you know, do they need shallow roots, 12-inch roots, 18-inch roots? What kind of container do you need to put them in? Regardless, you can have fun with it, your family can get involved with it, and you can be very productive, okay? All right, on that note, I'm Dr. Holly with the Whole Health Initiative. My website, choicesunlimited.ca, has very little on it anymore. I keep telling you, over 980 articles were taken down so I didn't get tagged by you know who. And so there's very little on the website now. There is another site, drhollybooks.com. I have written over 30 books. I've got 8 in process right now that are being edited. One should come up quickly, and then the other should be quickly after that, and then it'll be, take some time for the ones after that. And I'm also writing 2 new books right now. So, but I have completed over 30 books. I think there's 20 on the website. You can order them through Amazon. You can order them through, download. You can download them in a variety of different ways. Okay. I used to have like 42, 48 something different videos on YouTube. I don't think they're there anymore. There is the Whole Life Initiative program that you can tap into. I think that's still running. There's lots of free information. The point being, lots and lots of free information. And, of course, all the articles that I've done for Nicole's program here, newsforthesoul.com, Nicole, the producer, has archived them. So you've got all that free information as well. Please make use of it. Please think healthy, work healthy, be healthy. And, again, when it comes to the whole narrative and all the different things going down the rabbit hole, remember, don't get emotionally involved in it. Understand it. Be aware. Don't be an ostrich with your head in the sand. Be aware of what's going on. Be engaged in to develop a better world. But use your energies to create that better world. Whether it's prayer, meditation, guided imagery, whatever you use, make sure that emotional energy, that healthy, good energy is going to create the world that you want to see, that you want to be a part of. And get engaged. The more we get people engaged in the process, the more we have the ability. Remember, there's a whole lot more of us than there is of them. Us being the white hats versus the black hats. We want to be engaged. We want to be part of the solution, not part of the problem. Okay? So passive information isn't enough. Get engaged. All the power to you. Have a great week, and we'll talk with you again next week. Take good care. Dr. Holly.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.